From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Soma in San Francisco.
Elmwood.
El Sobrano.
Do you live in Richmond?
Yeah.
Albany Village.
Panoramic in Berkeley.
Berkeley, California.
Coming up, we'll head to the streets to hear how some people in the Bay Area are reacting to the presidential election. Then an iconic San Francisco bookstore is closing. We'll hear what modern times has meant to the Mission District.
They're an inspiration, you know, for regular people, intellectuals, non-intellectuals.
And we'll learn about a program in Sacramento that's trying to keep families together.
People can overcome addiction if their motivation is strong enough. And this is the most effective motivation I've ever seen.
Raising our voices today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. Today, more than 1,000 high school students walked out of their classrooms to march in downtown San Francisco, protesting the election of Donald Trump. They follow in the footsteps of people who took to the streets yesterday.
Immigrants are welcome here! Immigrants are welcome here!
In downtown Oakland last night, protesters packed into Frank Ogawa Plaza.
We decided to organize a protest in less than 24 hours' notice. And it's beautiful to see thousands of people here in such short notice. Not our president! Not our president! Not our president! Not our president!
Word of the Oakland demonstration spread on Facebook. By the 5 p.m. start time, close to 4,000 people had RSVP'd that they planned to attend.
I just learned about this protest at about 4:15, and I'm amazed at the turnout.
That's Saria Smith.
I immediately denounced him as not my president. This doesn't represent the whole United States and how we feel. So I'm here, you know, because we need our voices to be heard.
Armando Torres was also in Oakland carrying a Mexican flag with the gay pride rainbow along the sides. He's worried about what a Trump presidency will mean for him.
As a gay Mexican American, it's not good.
A mix of socialist and racial justice groups organized the protest. Activist Kat Brooks told the crowd that a Trump victory shouldn't have surprised them.
And people was going, I can't believe it. I'm so shocked. What happened? I just got to sit with myself for a minute. Do you? You're shocked that this country that was founded on race-based bloody capitalism elected that bitch?
She wants the election of Donald Trump to be a turning point.
Get active, get trained, get disciplined, and get busy. Liberation,
now.
Liberation,
now.
Liberation,
now.
And we're done asking nicely. All right, y'all, we get ready to march.
Anti-gay, Donald Trump. Go away!
Racist, sexist, anti-gay!
Donald Trump, go away!
Racist, sexist, anti-gay!
Donald Trump, go away!
Thanks to KALW's Eli Wertschafter and Lisa Morehouse for those recordings. We know there are many sides to this election. We just heard some, but there are many other perspectives, and we want to hear them all. Call us and share your thoughts at 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. San Francisco is about to lose one of its most iconic and unique booksellers. Modern Times Bookstore Collective has been around since 1971, stocking everything from bestsellers to revolutionary pamphlets to all types of Latin American literature. It's a gathering place for social justice seekers and a touchstone for Mission District history. But Modern Times has been losing money for years now, and it's shutting its doors on Tuesday. KALW's Ben Trefney and Josiah Luis Alderete stopped by the shop and recorded this story.
Josiah Luis and I are taking a quick tour of Modern Times Bookstore Collective.
So like in the back here, it's kind of a shrine, a sort of a history.
Yeah, to the LGBT cultura, a lot of it. And then also the beginning of the history of the Modern Times.
Oh, that's right.
The store reflects and respects history.
And it's the image of the Charlie Chaplin gumming up the works.
In the gears from the Modern Times movie.
There's a children's book section in another corner.
And libros en español for niños, too. ¿Sabes dónde estás? María, La Fiebre de Oro, and a book in Spanish about Rosa Parks. ¿Quién fue Rosa Parks?
Wonderful.
Wendy Bardsley lives in the neighborhood. She's been coming to Modern Times for years, from when it had a much bigger location over on Valencia Street.
Oh my God, it's such a welcoming place for women, for anybody who's really kind of struggling with all of the money that's in this city right now. It just feels like home. I love to read. Reading means so much to me, and it really feels like home here. I'm really sad to see it go.
Yeah, what replaces a place like this?
I can't imagine. I just can't imagine. I mean, it's the rents being so high that is causing them to have to leave, that's displacing so many, and there's nothing that's going to be as much of an asset to the community as this bookstore is. It's just really, really sad.
Modern Times isn't very big anymore, but as Josiah Luis and I walk around, we see how eclectic it still is.
Yeah, that's a great disability and the erotic and sex sections together.
Yeah. You're right next to the cookbooks. I mean, stay at home night.
best bondage erotica, coming out like a porn star. Mm-hmm. Do you dream in colors? Forbidden acts.
Learning good consent.
Yes.
That's in the erotica side. That's cool.
That is really good. Hey, consent is sexy.
Up front, store manager Ashton DeVito is serving a customer who's buying a stack of paperbacks.
2816.
How much?
2816. Let me see what I got. Modern Times.
Ashton is the store's book buyer and manager. He's the only person working here on a weekday afternoon. He's here 5 days a week normally, sometimes 7 days.
I'm usually here more than I am at home. Let's just put it that way.
He used to live two doors down from the old Valencia Street location. He started volunteering there and worked his way up. Ashton says it's unique work.
Oh God, unique as hell. It's just, like, I never know who's coming through the door. I meet some of the strangest people in the city here, and I love it. I absolutely love this place. Hello.
Yeah, I called yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Talked to a man walks in. Ashton turns to help.
A couple of books of a
Which
book? Poet Laureate by Herrera.
Oh, okay. Yeah, let me go check.
The man's name is David Castro. He grew up in San Francisco back in the 1960s.
Yeah, San Francisco's so small with I went to high school with Carlos Santana, George Santana.
That was such a cool period.
Can you imagine having a pep rally with Carlos and jamming away?
With the afro that he had back then too, man.
Yeah. I mean, when he was sneaking into Avalon Ballroom up the street and then down to the Fillmore on Tuesday night jam sessions. The jam sessions sometimes were better than the weekend. But they had the best of the best when Bill Graham was there. I mean, it was just out of this world.
That was San Francisco back when Modern Times opened, in 1971. Super vibrant art scene, culture rippling through every block, brought together in books and conversation right here.
No, I mean, they're an inspiration, you know, for regular people, intellectuals, non-intellectuals. I mean, they share. I mean, they share the knowledge, the philosophy, psychology of what's going on around the world. And you got a multitude of poets, writers, you know, screen. I mean, it's very artistic. They've always been here for the neighborhood, and not just the neighborhood, but anybody coming to visit. I mean, you got people that come that have all these field trips on graffiti and art on the walls, and all of them walk by here. You know, some of them walk in, some of them don't, but Yeah, it's freedom of expression. That's really what it's all about.
Modern Times hosts book readings all the time. Monthly queer open mics, indigenous poetry series, the last one's happening this weekend. It's been a meeting space for activist groups, the Jacobin Reading Club, Gay Shame. The place serves a lot of people. So I ask Ashton,
why are you closing?
We haven't been breaking even for a long time, like a really long time. And we've done pretty much everything everybody involved can think of to turn that around. And pretty much all that's happened is it's kind of set that end date back a little bit. We do like a giant fundraiser or something and it just pushes it back. Nothing's really pushed us towards profitability. And it's not like, you know, as an anti-capitalist bookstore, you're in a kind of precarious situation when you talk about profit. But it's like we never really wanted to make money or anything. We just wanted to, you know, break even. And we could never really figure that out, unfortunately. Not for a long time, at least. Since the rise of Amazon, it's definitely been a lot harder.
Well, that's a feeling a lot of people have about San Francisco overall, is that it forces people to be very money conscious, money driven. Maybe Amazon or tech has had an impact on that. I know the tech is often vilified for that sort of thing. I mean, is there room for nonprofit oriented community businesses in San Francisco at this point, do you think?
Oh man, I mean, it's getting harder and harder. You're right, like the margin for error is incredibly slim. And you know, that always disproportionately affects the marginalized, you know, the low income kind of people, whoever the ideal target is, everybody who falls outside that range, they're the ones who get screwed by that kind of attitude way quicker. I mean, I still see a lot of hope in the city. There's a lot of great people in the city. There's a lot of great organizations. Growth is really what freaks me out. The idea that like something new and cool can pop up. Like just knowing as much as I know about small business, like the level you need to keep things sustainable, it's getting to the point where I guess if you wanted to do something that was really cool and you didn't have to focus so much on, you know, oh God, how are we going to pay rent this month? Like, that's getting harder and harder to find. You know, when your rent is at least like $6,000 a place for like a closet, you know, like what are you supposed to do but focus on money?
Can I ask what your rent was for this? This is not that large a storefront.
Actually, we had below market rate at $3,900. So, which I mean, yeah, we don't have a huge storefront. There was a much bigger spot where we were on Valencia, and I know that that's going for, when we got pushed out of there, they said they could get about $10,000 for the spot, and that was, what, 5 years ago? So I don't know what the glasses store that's in that spot now pays, but pass that thing every day.
So Tuesday, you guys are scheduled to close. Yep. What are you gonna do then?
Unemployment. I mean, I've been here almost every day for the past few years. I've accrued some unemployment. I'm like, man, that's my goal right now. Just kind of lay low. First off, I just need to close this place out, really. Like, it's heartbreaking, but you kind of got to see things through. You know, I'm not about to just bounce when it stops being fun.
Josiah, Luis, and I finish our tour up front.
I was like, I was saying, you know, that this bookstore is the... You go to a section, usually a bookstore will have like one shelf of libros en español, and it'll be like the most awful books. You know, this is the real culture right here. This is the real literature. I mean, Cortázar, you know, Márquez, you know, all the poets. Mm. Yeah, it's amazing. It's good stuff. Good stuff.
Modern Times Bookstore Collective shuts down on Tuesday. In San Francisco's Mission District, I'm Ben Trefney.
And I'm Josiah Luis Alderete for Cross Currents.
This is the last weekend to visit Modern Times. They've got a slate of public events and some books for sale. Find out where to find it all at klw.org. Click Cross Currents.
To believe. the torture beneath was all I would need.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Substance abuse is a factor in 80% of cases where a child is removed from a home. And there are signs that the opioid epidemic is sending more kids into the foster care system. To get their children back, parents usually have to beat the odds and complete rehab. Reporter Jenny Gold brings us a story about a program in Sacramento that's trying to keep families together.
At 10 a.m. every Wednesday morning, a line of parents pushing strollers files into a conference room at the Sacramento County Court Complex. They sit at rows of narrow plastic tables, shushing their babies and gazing up at a man in a black robe. A blonde woman holding a cooing baby approaches the podium.
Good morning. Who do you have with you there?
It's my daughter, Kaylin.
Hi, Kaylin.
Hearing officer Jim Teal is checking in with Emma, Kaylin's 20-year-old mom. We're not using her last name because her case is active with Child Protective Services. Emma started doing drugs at just 16. At first, it was meth, then heroin, and then she got pregnant. When Kaylin was born, she tested positive for heroin. The hospital called CPS, and they took Kaylin into custody.
And I regret every moment of it. It's hard, but I just gotta keep my head up and keep moving forward.
Like Emma, many parents here entered the system after having babies born addicted. Others were reported by friends or family. All risk losing custody of their children because of drug abuse. To keep their kids, the parents need treatment. Most people in Sacramento would have a 3-month wait, but parents in this early intervention family drug court get to start immediately.
So, Emma, it says here you're 63 days compliant?
Yes, I am.
And 63 days in the program, so you've been good.
Yes.
You've been doing what you're told. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
This isn't an actual court. It's a program that helps families before they enter the court and foster care system. If they can't get sober, they're sent next door to a formal family drug court, where their children are taken away and given attorneys of their own. Emma credits her success so far to her social worker.
It's been great. I got my daughter back in my custody with him. He's an amazing CPS worker.
She's talking about Matt Takamoto. He's been a social worker for nearly 20 years, and he's been with this program since it first started 6 years ago.
In the past, there's been a lot more distrust of Child Protective Services, that all we want to do is remove the kids, and that's the last thing we want to do. It's a lot of more paperwork to remove a kid than it is to keep the kid where they're at.
He says the program is an important change in the county's approach to addiction.
It just seems from my perception that in the olden days that their clients, we would be quicker to send them to court, maybe more blaming, the addict versus, giving them the tools they need.
Each parent is paired with a social worker like Matt and a recovery specialist. The 6-month program is rigorous. In addition to monthly sessions at the court, they have almost daily group meetings, random testings, and parenting classes. Those addicted to opioids have access to methadone treatment, and once or twice a week, they get a home visit from their social worker. Takamoto drives over to the residential rehab facility, where Emma is living with her baby.
Here we are. This is where my clients go for residential help.
We aren't allowed to go into the center, so we observe from the parking lot. In the back is a grassy yard with a small jungle gym, where several moms are watching their children play. Emma holds Kaylin in her lap. Takamoto seems happy with her progress. But he says the hardest part of his job is realizing that not all parents are going to make it through the program. In fact, just a third end up graduating.
If, these parents are not successful, ultimately it's the kids that pay the price.
Nationally, just a small fraction of families who could use family drug courts have access to them. Sherry Heller says that's a shame because they're an example of a government program that actually works. Heller runs Sacramento's health department.
People can overcome addiction if their motivation is strong enough, and this is the most effective motivation I've ever seen.
She says the evidence speaks for itself. The children in this program are 3 times less likely to be taken away from their families.
The rush that comes with getting high is pretty spectacular, and it's very hard physically once the addiction happens to overcome. And if there's one thing that matters to people more than the thrill of getting high, it's the thrill of doing the right thing for your children, of keeping your family intact.
Back in the early intervention family drug court, parents share tender moments with their children. They bounce them on their laps, kiss their tiny hands, and hold them close when they fuss. Emma clearly wants to be a good mom.
And how do you see your future 6 months from now? What do you think it's going to look like?
Very good. Hopefully I'm have my daughter with me at all times. That's awesome. Have a good life. Mm-hmm. Just clean. Don't have to have drugs no more.
Sacramento County also has a stake in her success. It saves about $21,000 a year for every kid that doesn't have to go into the court and foster system. That adds up to about $7 million in savings every year.
That was reporter Jenny Gold. She reports with Kaiser Health News, a nonprofit, editorially independent program of the Kaiser Family Foundation. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. And now it's time for Audiograph, the Bay Area's sonic signature. Here's KALW's Julie Kane.
Today, I'm going to play you one of my favorite Audiograph stories. It's a piece I made a few years ago when I heard the sound of a man singing opera in downtown San Francisco.
We are at Powell Street at the turnaround in San Francisco, California, of course. The only place where you'll hear something like this, more than likely.
Non più andrai farfallone ammanoso, notte, giorno, ed intorno, girando, nelle mani del mondo riposo, l'architetto regino d'amor, nelle mani del mondo riposo, l'architetto regino
d'amor. My name is Tim Blevins. Better know, alias Opera. Everybody calls me Opera. I have a degree in music and voice, and I've actually worked around the world. I'm unemployed at the moment, so I'm just singing, you know, wherever.
Alla gloria militar, alla gloria militar.
And what is it about opera that really speaks to your soul? Like, why opera?
I don't know. I mean, when I started singing opera, I was in, I was 23. I was in college, and I heard a Verdi piece. And it was Otello. It was Iago's aria from Otello. And, you know, the hair stood up on my, you know, I got goosebumps.
Vanne, la tua meta già vedo.
It's just so dramatic, it's, you know, and then the story behind it, if you know what's going on behind it, it's just, the music, musically is just incredible.
And Otello is about what, in a nutshell?
He's a black man, actually, he's a Moor. And Iago was his nemesis, you know, Iago was trying to set him up. So that he would, he thought that his girl Desdemona, I think her name is, was cheating on him, and he kills her, you know, and so you know that's basically what most opera plots are about, you know, some guy loves another guy's woman and they kill, you know, in order to get the woman they kill that, you know, and then the lady kills herself, you know, just some crazy stuff, you know.
That was Tim Blevins, whose singing you may have heard on San Francisco streets. There's a GoFundMe campaign going on right now to help fund his hip replacement surgery and to help him get back on his feet. To find out more, head to our website. What are some of the sounds you love? Call me and tell me all about them. 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. We always love it when you call us. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks for playing. I'm Julie Kane.
Thanks, Julie. Well, that's it for us today. Our team includes Josiah Luis Alderete, Leela Day, Olivia Henry, Angela Johnston, Greer McVeigh, Ted Muldoon, Lisa Morehouse, James Rowland, Stephen Short, Judy Silber, and Andrew Stelzer. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by banjo master Bill Evans. You can catch him at the California Banjo Extravaganza this Saturday at the Freight and Salvage Coffee House in Berkeley. The program starts at 8 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.